Hello, and welcome to Marching On, the podcast brought to you by the ACLU of Kansas. I'm Micah Kubik, Executive Director at the ACLU of Kansas, and we thank you for listening. Now, when people think of the work we do at the ACLU of Kansas, oftentimes the first thought that comes to mind is our work within the legal system. And perhaps the second thought is about the work that we do with lawmakers, Congress and the state legislature. But one very important part of our work, one that makes so much else possible, is that done by our field team, by organizers. They work in and work with communities across the state to help advance civil liberties at the local level. To give you just a little taste of what that local level work involves, in this episode, we'll listen in to a conversation on county-level community advocacy between ACLU of Kansas team members Esme Sung, Communications Director, and Leslie Bush, Field Director. There are a few reasons why this work is so very important. First, too often working in the legal system or fighting against bad legislation is mostly about reaction, just stopping the world from getting worse. Our fieldwork, though, has a cornucopia of opportunities to be proactive, to make the world actually better, to expand civil rights and civil liberties. Second, while the judges and legislators who serve as the decision makers in the legal and legislative systems can often feel disconnected from our communities, working at the county level often means that the officials making the decisions are more accessible and more accountable to you, their constituents. So, without further ado, let's throw it over to our friends Esme and Leslie as they discuss the importance of county-level advocacy and how it's making Kansas a more free, just, and equal place.
Hi there. Thank you for joining us for our discussion today. I hope your summer has given you time to reflect and rest. My name is Esme Tsung. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the Communications Director at the ACLU of Kansas. I'm joined today by Leslie Bush, she, her, who is the Field Director here. And I'm really excited to talk with you, Leslie, today about all of the county level work for civil liberties in Kansas and just how important that field organizing work has been for our organization's work. And first, I do want to shout out Jesse Keelman, our communications and multimedia manager, who produces this pod along with so much of our digital media and who came up with the idea of today's topic. As the ACLU, we're very used to folks expecting that our work is going to be focused on the courts and the legislature, and that's what tends to grab the headlines that are ACLU of Kansas related at all. So that tends to be what people see more of. And so I'm glad you're here today to talk to me about some of the really incredible examples of how powerful community-focused county-level advocacy is. And I really want to take a deeper look at the answers we can sort of give people when they're asking how they can get involved and what kind of impact they can expect to have or hope to have. But first, let's sort of take a step back and look at the bigger picture of civil liberties work, Leslie, because I would love if you could explain to people broadly why we shouldn't just rely on the courts or the legislature as the most effective places to create change.
Sure. We talk about this a lot at ACLU. The courts will not save us. The courts inherently are a reactionary tool. So when I think about litigation or the legislature or local advocacy work as different tools in a toolbox, the local organizing work is a lot more proactive. And in some places, the legislature can be proactive, but in Kansas, we're doing a lot of defense when it comes to the state legislature. We don't always have a path for proactive wins on civil liberties. And in the courts, we're also, while we can do proactive litigation, we're often keeping bad things from happening, to put it simply. So that's true for the courts and the legislature. But at the local level, we do have the power to win proactive things for our communities. And so that's why we focus on local organizing work.
Yeah, that's a great example, too, I think, of how we talk about the work, sort of looking at the ACLU's work really broadly over the past years and decades. And I think the organization very much started as a litigation firm. But when you think about how litigation gets filed, it sort of depends on something bad happening. So something bad has to happen and then we respond with litigation. So it's very much downstream, but what you're talking about is very much proactive, upstream solutions before unconstitutional practices can take over, or even beyond that, just sort of creating the change upstream that Kansans want to see before we have to wait for a rights violation.
Exactly. And I think it's also, you know, while, you know, proactive litigation can be a possibility, courts are also slow. Mm-hmm. They just take a really long time and a lot of resources. But when we're working on a smaller scale, we're able to see wins. You know, month to month, things can change when you're working with a local official. And I think that's also something that can be really motivating and inspiring and fueling for people, as they can see an immediate impact of their work, which we just don't see in a courtroom and you don't see in the legislature.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I think we have examples of how we know the legislature doesn't necessarily hear Kansans when it comes to sort of the changes that we want to see. So when we're thinking about what you said about the courts and the legislature, and we know that these institutions are accountable to us to a certain extent, right? So understanding that, why does local advocacy matter so much, and how have you worked to make it part of the field organizing program here?
Sure. So we have some really recent examples in Kansas history. August 2nd, 2022, the anti-abortion amendment failed to change the Constitution by 18 points, which was like a resounding victory for reproductive rights advocates.
We don't have candidates that usually win by that much.
No, we don't have candidates that usually win by that much. And yet, after that passed, of course, the legislature passed a bunch of, you know, restrictions, or they tried to pass a bunch of restrictions, and a few did go through. And so they're clearly not responding to the wishes of Kansans. We also see that when it comes to medical marijuana. We know that Kansans overwhelmingly support people having access to medical marijuana and joining the rest of the country. But the legislature continues to be in a stalemate, mostly because of the Senate president. So we see this pattern where the people say one thing, the legislature does something different. And when it comes to voting rights, for example, we were able to effectively stop all of the anti-voting rights bills that came through the legislature in the past 2 years. But there's plenty of proactive things we would love to do when it comes to voting rights. We would love to do statewide measures that would make it easier to vote. But unfortunately, when you do a power analysis, there's just not a clear path to win those things in Kansas right now. And so that's why in the local organizing work, we are focused at the county level. We are focused on encouraging election commissioners and county clerks to do better, because while it might be one small policy change for them, it could have a huge impact on the people in the community. And if we can go one by one and change county policy, we're able to make those proactive impacts that we can't see statewide.
Yeah, and for the voters in that county, they're electing the official that administers their elections, their local county official, and that local county official is obviously accountable to them, versus, I think, you know, when you're talking about statewide change, it's such a bigger ask than just saying the person that you sort of know personally and you're in the county, asking them for certain things like advanced mail ballot applications being sent to everyone, right? Or more early voting hours. Am I hitting all of them? early voting, yeah, of course. And I think the other example I would also hit on is when we're talking about how the legislature has not heard or represented Kansans, is focus on attacking trans rights over some of the proactive things that you're talking about. Is we have plenty of constituents and people that you're working with through the field program who have said and answered our past research that say, you know, we want to expand the right to vote. We want access to medical marijuana. We don't want abortion restrictions. And the legislature, as we know, was so focused on attacking trans rights and other issues. I think that sort of feeds into when we're talking about the importance of county level work in voting rights. It also feeds into the county level work that we're doing for bail reform. Before we dive in, I think it's important to define what bail actually is. So this is when you're faced with arrest and have criminal charges filed against you before you're actually sentenced or go to see a judge or convicted. You're still considered innocent. The judge often imposes a dollar amount, and that's known as cash bail. And that's the amount of money that it takes for you to get out of jail, go home, back to your job, back to your family. And so we know that that has nothing to do with your innocence or guilt relates to the crime. And we know that people who can't pay end up having to stay in jail, and that leaves them more vulnerable to losing their housing, losing their jobs, losing their kids in some cases. And so we know that in Kansas, your freedom depends on your wealth when we're talking about the bail system. And so talking through that basic process of bail as a starting point, what misconceptions do you hear most often, and what do you really want people to understand about the whole system?
Sure. So I think the thing that always comes up is around community safety. People are worried about their safety, and I think policing and jailing and incarceration are not necessarily things that make us safer. And I think we see that the U.S. is widely known as incarcerating more people than really any other country in the world. And we see that at the local level, too. And so we have this culture of punishment, this culture of mass incarceration that really touches all of us. And while this is the big picture, I say all this because this does play into our thoughts around bail specifically, because it's so easy for folks to immediately go to, you know, does that mean that we're going to let out people who are violent and they will be living in our communities? And the answer really is an easy one. No, that's not what we're saying. We're saying that district attorneys and judges would still have the discretion to incarcerate someone pre-trial if they really thought that that was necessary and there was a real threat to public safety. But when you look at folks who are incarcerated right now in our jails in Kansas, that's not what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And you're seeing folks that are there a lot of times because they're poor, mm-hmm. and because of maybe the zip code they live in. And we want to see a different bail system. We want to see a bail system that is fair, basically. That's really all we're asking for. And we're also asking for something that's not unpopular. Typically, when folks understand how the system works, that there are folks caught up in this that are not a threat to public safety, but are sitting there just because of their inability to pay, most people think that's wrong. Most yeah. Kansans think that's wrong.
The bail system is such an embodiment of, when we're talking about the criminalization of poverty and committing certain crimes because of your economic status or having circumstances that are largely informed by poverty that leads you to be involved with the criminal legal system, and then being involved in the criminal legal system and being disadvantaged in it because you don't have money again. And so you see this mm-hmm. like cycle that especially bail, I think, contributes to.
Well, I think it's this idea that, again, like back to, we really have this culture of punishment, and it's yeah. not, and I want to say that again, because it's not really centered on safety. We know what keeps us safe, and it's not increasing funding for our incarceration, our systems of incarceration and policing. But what we see is that, you know, folks are incarcerated before they've been proven guilty. So people who are innocent are sitting in our jails and losing these things like their job and their housing and potentially custody of their children. And that doesn't just affect them. I've heard stories about grandmas putting up their house to be able to pay a bail amount. So that's something that's affecting our communities in all sorts of ways. And so it's really a negative impact on all of us beyond the negative impact on the individual and the family.
Yeah, and I did pull up our 2023 research survey that we did. So FM3 is a research firm that surveyed 700 Kansas voters to assess their views on different criminal legal system reforms, and cash bail was one of the ones that actually had the greatest support. It was nearly 7 in 10, so 69% of Kansans supported reforming cash bail to create a path for most people to go home the same day they're arrested if they don't pose a flight risk or are not a threat to anyone. And so I think you're painting this picture of folks being sort of assessed by the judge for all these different factors, the safety, the flight risk, their family, their ability to pay, all these different circumstances that right now sounds like is not being considered, and it's mostly just on, can you fork over this pile of cash? And I think that feeds into some of the more local work that we're doing. So I wonder if you could talk through the two priority counties we have for bail reform. So we have Sedgwick and Wyandotte. Why did these two become the emphasis for our county-based work for bail reform versus the other, 103 counties in the state?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One is that we know that Sedgwick and Wyandotte County incarcerate a lot of people. When you look statewide at every county in Kansas, they're near the top in terms of rates of incarceration. So we know that the impact of reforming the bail system would really be felt in Wyandotte and Sedgwick County in a way that it maybe would look different in other places. And then also simply, we've got people there. So we've got people in our base, you know, shout out to the folks in Wichita and KCK that work with us every day.
So when you're talking about folks who've worked with us every day, who make all this work possible, what does that work look like? Is that, you know, calls to the DA? Is that talking to neighbors? What does it look like?
Yeah, so we're still kind of in the beginning stages of this campaign where we're gathering support. But Yusuf Presley, the criminal legal reform organizer, has done an outstanding job connecting with people in Wichita and in KCK. And so it's looked like a lot of conversations with people who live in these communities are impacted by this issue and just have thoughts about how we should move forward. And so one of the first things we've done, and you can do this now, you know, you can sign up to be a part of this campaign. You can sign up and you can let us know if you'd be willing to talk to your DA, if you'd be willing to encourage your friends and family to join us. Because that's really what this is about encouraging your local district attorney to change their practice in their office. We are focused on the district attorney's office as a way to encourage someone who is a local elected official, which is really important because we have the power of voting them in or voting them out.
Accountability, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're choosing to target them, encourage them to do the right thing and change their bail practices. And so one of the first things we've done is just simply ask people in the community to send them an email and ask them to support reforming bail and ask them to change their policy internally as a way to start this process.
I think this also touches on what we've talked about before, which is bail reform would not even be on the radar of these county attorneys were it not for our program and the folks reaching out to them, right? So much of the ACLU of Kansas's work, especially when working directly with communities, is focused on starting conversations that otherwise would not be happening, right? In the last several years, I think Kansas is sort of behind in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's an important role that we play as an institution. You know, we see the polling. We see that 7 out of 10 Kansans want to change the way cash bail is handled, and we have the tools to help navigate that. So we have a proposed policy, and we have the tools to mobilize people. And so we're responding to that ask, and we're trying to change it.
And giving people, you know, the tools that they need to make the change that they want. So beyond our work in criminal legal reform, there's a lot going on the county level when it comes to voting access. So we talked earlier about some of the policy asks that our activists are asking for in their counties. I wonder if you'd want to sort of drill down on specific counties. So maybe we can start with Ellis County and the awesome work going on in Hayes. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So in Hayes, we're trying to win a polling location at Fort Hays State University. It's pretty simple. That's what we want. And we want it, but we also know the community has been asking for it for at least a decade.
A decade, yeah.
Probably more. There's an organization at the university called the American Democracy Project that has been leading a lot of this work. When Allie Utley, the voting rights organizer, and I went to Hayes way back in the spring of 2023, we had a little meeting with folks there, and they said, there's some students at the college you need to talk to that are trying to win a polling location on campus. And so we responded and made it part of our campaign. And so, you know, like I mentioned with the bail reform work, we really, you know, heard what the community wanted. We knew we wanted to work on voting rights at the county level, and they said they want a polling location on Fort Hays State, and so that's what we're trying to win.
And from what I've gathered, the county clerk, Ms. Bobby Dreiling, has been very resistant to the idea of a location on campus. Can you explain some of the back and forth that has happened with the county clerk since that meeting in 2023 that you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we came into this after the fact, after they had started it. And I want to, you know, shout out to Madison Albers and Grace McCord, who did a ton of work. I mean, they did a ton of research. They worked within the university to find support from leadership, from everyone from the Student Senate to local organizations on campus.
I think even the police department, the campus police department.
Yeah, and the president of the college, local organizations, local business owners, they really built community support for this issue across the board. And, you know, they took their proposal to Ms. Dreiling and heard concerns about things like accessibility, the location. But, and I'm just naming that because Grace and Madison were able to come back and resolve all of those issues.
So they really sort of heard the points that she was making and responded. Do you feel like they've had that same sort of responsiveness from Ms. Dreiling?
Ms. Dreiling has certainly been responsive, but she has made it very clear that she is not going to open a polling location on Jorge State campus.
Gotcha.
Okay. That is what she has said. We also, we've been working with the students for a long time. We've been reaching out to the broader community. I think we have over 530 signatures on the petition for Fort Hays State mm-hmm. University polling location. We have yard signs in the community now, folks putting up a sign in their yard showing they support the polling location. And in April of this year, we went to the county clerk and delivered the names of people who had signed the petition in support. We have had folks emailing Ms. Dreiling. We've had folks show up to county commission meetings. We've had folks in the media writing LTEs to the local paper. And still, Ms. Dreiling is consistent that she is not going to open the polling location. You know, you ask an elected official for the thing that you want, and they can say yes or no, and you move from there. And so she has said no every time. We're certainly not going anywhere. We're not going to go anywhere until we win, and that's the plan with all of our campaigns. We will be sticking around until we win.
That's a great summary of the amazing advocacy that's happening in Hays. And, you know, I love the work that everyone's doing out there. And I think this ties into another location that the community has been working for years and years and years, it feels like. So the work for early voting in Shawnee right now, so out of all the big counties, Shawnee County, where Topeka is the only one that only has one early voting location for the entire county. So can you share more about the work that's happening there and why that's so important for the people in Shawnee?
Yeah, I would love to talk about Shawnee County. So like you said, Shawnee County is, of like the big five counties in Kansas, it's the only one with one early vote location. And I think this is really important for folks to understand because like even Wyandotte County has five. Shout out to Election Commissioner Michael Abbott. He added a couple more this year. Johnson County has many more than that, I think over 12.
Yeah, and on top of that, I actually pulled up the blog that we did last month on Shawnee County early voting compared to some other counties. Shout out to Jesse, who did the research and drafted that. So we've got Shawnee County, which has 116,000 voters per early voting poll, and comparing that to a place like Wyandotte, which you said has five locations, which has one poll for every 18,321 voters. So that's, you know, almost 10 times the density of voters per early voting location. So tell me a little bit about how we're working with the folks in Shawnee County to sort of change that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this work has, like you mentioned, has been going on a long time. You know, it's not new. We didn't invent it. Allie and I went to Topeka in 2023 and asked folks, what do you want to work on here? And they said early vote because they had been working on it for a long time. And this includes illegal women voters in the Topeka area, the YWCA, LULAC, NAACP, all of these folks have been engaged for a long time on the issue. They let us know this was something that was a huge concern to them. You know, and it's not just a concern for Topeka voters because the early vote location is located at the election office, which is in Topeka. But Shawnee County has a lot of rural, smaller towns, mm-hmm. and folks are having to drive quite a while to get to an early vote location. And when you think about early vote, you know, the idea is really to be accessible to people. We all have a right to vote on election day if we want to, if that's what works best for us. We have a right to leave work and do that. But the reality for a lot of people is like, that's just not possible. Mm-hmm. Like, to have one day where you can vote is just not possible. And so while it's great Shawnee County has early vote option, to just have one location is a huge barrier for people who have to travel. Also, the hours are more limited than other early vote locations. And so
sort of contradicts the whole point of convenience that is early voting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so we really just want to bring Shawnee County up to speed with the other counties in the state, you know, and provide more opportunities to vote early. And it's not a controversial issue. In Shawnee County, we have asked the election commissioner, Andrew Howell, for more early vote locations, and he said no. He said that he doesn't think it's a need. And we disagree. We think that there's a huge need, and we've also heard that from the community. And so we're continuing to try to gather support, base build invite, you know, folks that are listening who live in Topeka, we would love for you to join us as we encourage the election commissioner to expand early vote.
And so much of this work also seems like I can imagine folks who live sort of in the corner of Shawnee County who maybe haven't even thought to ask for more early voting. And so I think it's great that we're supporting the work in Shawnee, and I hope they get another early voting location, or five, to be more like Wyandotte. So speaking of Wyandotte, that's been the site of a lot of other voting access work on the county level. And so the objective there is obviously a little bit different since, like you said, we do respond to the needs of the community. So why don't you talk to me about what the folks in Wyandotte are working on and what that process has been like?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Wyandotte County, we want to win language access. Wyandotte County is one of the most diverse counties in the state, but it's also one of the most diverse counties in the entire country. We have more than 80 languages spoken in the school districts in Wyandotte. I'm sure even more than that broadly. So we also know that in Wyandotte County, over 50,000 people are more comfortable in another language besides English. So English is not their primary language. And so we want language access. We think you should be able to vote in the language you're most comfortable in. Spanish is the first language we're asking for access in because that's the highest need in Wyandotte County right now. I live in KCK. KCK is a bilingual community, especially certain neighborhoods. You go to the grocery store, you go to a local restaurant. Everything's in Spanish and English. So asking for elections to be in both languages really is not too much to ask.
Yeah. So we know that the federal standard for requiring voting materials in a language other than English has some very specific criteria. And that, I think, should be the floor, right? So we know that there are four counties in Kansas that meet that criteria: Seward, Grant, Ford, Finney. And those are much smaller counties. Their populations are much lower. And so you're talking about actual raw number of voters that is much lower than the number of voters you're talking about in Wyandotte County because Wyandotte is so populous. And I think we've talked before, too, on this pod, there are at least 10 other counties in Kansas that don't meet the federal requirement, but do provide additional language access. So it sounds like what we're asking for in Wyandotte is entirely possible, and there are examples elsewhere in the state.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, the federal threshold, it's like you said, it's the floor, it's not the ceiling. We also know election commissioners and county clerks can expand access to voting in all sorts of different ways. That's why not every county has the same number of polling locations. You know, there are standards set by the Secretary of State, but every election commissioner and county clerk can go above those standards if they would like to provide more access. And so that's all we're asking for here. It's not beyond the powers of their role. They can provide language access.
Yeah, and it sounds like the Secretary of State and on the state level, they're not going to issue that directive because underlying that is sort of the idea that the local county officials should have the ability to respond directly to their community and establish access in a way that meets the needs of the community. And it sounds like what you're saying is, you know, in Wyandotte, in Ellis, in Shawnee, the community is saying, this is what we need, and that's sort of not happening.
Exactly. And I think something that kind of ties all these campaigns together is also these local officials often don't think of themselves as politicians. You know, your state rep and your state senator and your U.S. Congress folks, like, they expect to hear from you. They expect your emails and your calls asking them to do things. But at the local level, it's just not the same. People aren't expecting to hear from the community in the same way. Even though, you know, I think a lot of them do sign up as public servants and want to represent their communities. But we're trying to change the script. Your election commissioner is accountable to you. Your county clerk, you vote them in, you vote them out. Election commissioners are appointed by the Secretary of State, but we vote for a Secretary of State too. So that's a message I really want folks to hear, is that these local officials are accountable to you too, even if they may not see their role in that way.
I think that's such a great point about flipping the script, right, in all these counties. And really, I think there's a story here about, you know, at least as a Kansan myself, when I watch what the legislature does, I can feel a little helpless, like I'm sort of on the sidelines. And the story that you're sort of telling me today is all about how folks can actually really drive exactly what's happening and drive the change that they want to see. And I love to see how these needs, you know, there's like an agency there of people naming this need that they want, whether that's early voting in Shawnee or language access in Wyandotte, and then those same folks taking action, holding their official accountable to that need. And so I know a lot of this is happening out of the Beehive. And I'd love if you could share more about how the Beehive works, what it is, how it connects to everything we've talked about today.
Yeah, totally. Love to talk about the Beehive. The Beehive is just the name of our organizing program here at the ACLU. The way that it works is really just by asking people to take action and then inviting other people to take action. So, you know, I can give my election commissioner a call, ask him to expand language access, but the way the Beehive works is I'm also going to call 25 other people and ask them to do the same thing to grow our reach. By mobilizing all these people, hundreds of people taking action at the same time, we're able to show these local elected officials that there is power and there are people paying attention, people that want to hold them accountable, people that want them to do their jobs, which is represent what the community needs and make decisions based on the community's needs.
So if folks listening live in one of these communities, so, you know, we've talked about Sedgwick, Wyandotte, Shawnee, Ellis County today, how should they get involved? How should they get connected to you to start on reform work in local reform work in their actual county?
Yeah, they can go to our website and sign up to join us. An organizer will call them or text them and set up a meeting with them. And we also are going to be doing regular onboarding. So we have new member orientation, and that's where we introduce you to the local organizing campaigns. We'll catch you up to speed on where we're at, talk about what we're planning, and invite you to get involved in the Beehive. And so that's every second Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Zoom, so you can sign up for the next one.
So great. Thanks so much, Leslie. I always love talking to you.
Thanks, Esme.
A great big thank you goes out to Leslie and Esme for sharing more about our important local work. Of all the important things to know about local organizing, one that is particularly notable is that it is the easiest and most effective way for you to get involved. So, if you've been wondering what you can do for civil liberties, a great place to start is at the local level. And we have made it even easier for you to get started. If you go to aclukansas.org/takeaction, you'll find as many ways as your heart desires to quickly and easily reach out to local officials and advocate for civil liberties. There are county-specific actions for local officials on voter access, criminal legal reform, and much more. If you don't see an action specific to your county, fear not. You can use the site to reach out to your lawmaker in any of Kansas's 105 counties, and there's an option to join our election protection team, and much more. So again, that's aclukansas.org/takeaction. aclukansas.org/takeaction. To find ways to speak up for civil liberties in your community today. That does it for this episode of Marching On. For the ACLU of Kansas, I'm Micah Kubik. We'll be back next month for more conversations with the people working at the heart of the civil liberties movement in Kansas. Until next time, keep marching on.